Well, since we know that Cameron has called and said he probably will not be with us, I think since it's 5:01, I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. So good evening, everybody, and welcome. I will call to order the Pacific City Joint Water and Sanitary Authority Board of Directors business meeting. It is November 3rd, 2020 at 5 p.m., and we are meeting via video teleconference call. I'll call the roll. Ann Price.
Here.
John Carlton.
Here.
Tom Donahue.
Here.
For the record, Cameron Gogas is absent. Otherwise, all directors are present. Item 3, approval of the meeting minutes of October 6, 2020 for the business meeting. Any comments or corrections? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Hearing none, I'll move that we. Hearing no comments or corrections, I'll move the approval of the October 6, 2020 business meeting.
I'll second it.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the business meeting minutes of October 6, 2020. All in favor, aye.
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 Thank you. Meeting minutes have been approved. Item 4, financial report. Accounts payable for October 6th, October 15th, and October 31st of 2020. Any questions on the accounts payable?
I have a comment or two.
Please, Tom, go ahead.
On October 6th, we had a $2,350 payment to Industrial Software Solutions. Under the description, by the way, I love the description column. I really appreciate it. It really makes this a lot easier. But in that column, it said SCADA software for Horn. What does SCADA stand for?
Yeah, Tom, I pronounce it SCADA. It stands for Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition. And this was a contract, an annual contract to have them on standby 24/7 if we need their support.
Oh, it's a software thing? What?
It's software support for the Horn Creek water treatment plant. It's very automated, and without their support, we'd be at risk of having to shut the plant down on occasion.
This done via a data link or something that they monitor?
Yeah. Well, yes.
Okay, thank you. The other thing I had is there was several thousand dollars on the sticks also going to ESCO controls, and it says flow meter calibrations. My question was, will the new water meters lessen or eliminate flow meter costs? In other words, I understood that you're going to be able to, in real time, measure a lot of flows. And would if that's the case, would we still need to make those kinds of expenditures to TESCO controls, or is it something different?
Yes, those are two different things, Tom, and I'll explain that by describing the AMRs and AMI radio meters are customer usage. These are the flow meters that measure our produced water, our production. So those meters are essential at Horn Creek and at our well sites. Those meters were calibrated this year. And then the wastewater treatment plant flow meters are also critical to us on the influent and the effluent of this plant. And Rochelle, I see you looking at the report. That was our annual calibration expense, correct?
Yes.
Well, yeah, there's one more calibration. Just the backflow devices are being calibrated right now.
So, Kirk, so when we put in the new meters, the individual meters, you mentioned one of the things that was an advantage to us was to measure usage and flow. Is that completely different?
No, from that? I know how they're connected is the new AMI meters will allow us to read our customer usage daily so that we can compare it with these production flow meters daily. And the difference between those two will oftentimes tell us whether or not there's a leak in the system.
Okay, thank you. That's the only comments I had about on accounts payable. And once again, I love the description. It makes it a column. It makes it a lot easier. Glad you put that in there. Thank you.
And that was all Michelle and Rochelle.
Well, tip of the hat, ladies.
Thanks, Tom. Any other additional questions?
No, I have none.
Okay, not hearing any more questions, I'll move that we approve the accounts payable for October 6th, October 15th, and October 31st of 2020.
I second the motion.
It has been moved and seconded that we approve the accounts payable for October 6th, October 15th, and October 31st of 2020. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion is unanimously approved. Thank you. Item 4B, the fiscal year report 2021. Any questions for the authority manager on the report?
No, not for me.
Hearing none, we'll then move on to item 5, the manager's report. Kirk?
COVID-19 impacts, still no change. We've been doing very well. Our office remains closed to in-person transactions. Social distancing and mask usage has once again been enhanced in our work areas. Operations staff has remained healthy, and water and the sewer usage, I've noticed looking at our monthly report, also looks normal. If anything, in the last 2 months, it's been a little on the higher side, but I'll get into details on that here when I show the graphs. Our office staff continues to work remotely when practical. And I'm almost always in the office. Rochelle's usually in the office, but when she gets caught up, she can work remotely. And Michelle is the most comfortable working remotely, so she's very productive from home. Well, with that said, our COVID in-person transaction plan is something that I said last month I would discuss in a little more detail this month. But with the recent COVID cases continuing to climb across the country, we're still remaining closed for in-person visits, but we are moving in a direction where we've got a written plan now that describes how we would address customers when we do decide to have an in-person transaction. Very few occasions does that, or that very rarely occurs, I'll say. But at some point in the future, we do anticipate providing some type of curbside or drive-up service. And if we were to do that, we've got a procedure that we can follow. It would involve employees wearing KN95 masks and using nitrile gloves to be handling any documents that could be transferred. Other than that, the procedure really that I've developed is part of an infectious control plan that I've drafted this week, and we want to remain in compliance with OSHA, and they've had some new requirements. Short term, they may be, we're going to have those in place within the designated time frame. That's really all I had to talk about COVID, unless there's some other questions. Anne?
I've been listening to the Board of County Commissioners meetings and the community meeting that they hold on Fridays where the Coastal Caucus is speaking, and there's been a lot of talk about the new OSHA procedures, regulations, I'm not sure what the correct term is, but apparently they have gone through several drafts of that. So my question is, if you're aware if the final revision of the OSHA guidelines has come out, are they done revising and they've issued the real thing?
Yeah, I've got a copy here of the new rules, which is why I've expanded my procedure to include an infection control plan. But they explain here that a draft deadline is within 1 month from the date of the new rule. An exposure risk assessment was also necessary. And so I took an initial attempt at documenting what I felt our exposure risks were, but there's supposed to be some templates available in here in the near future, so I anticipate updating this plan as soon as that's made available.
Yeah, okay. Well, I know that had been a long time coming to finalize that, so, and if anybody wants the details, of course, they can go on the OSHA website, I'm sure, but thanks, I appreciate that.
You're welcome. One other item I was going to discuss on the manager's report was the water storage tank inspections. We were able to utilize marine industrial divers to clean and inspect all three of our water storage reservoirs. They found some sediment, but mostly sand in all of the tanks, but not an excessive amount. Yeah, it was no surprise. I think the sand is coming from our groundwater source, very common for groundwater wells to produce some sand. But the contractor removed that sand from the tanks, and so far I'm still waiting on the final report. But when I was out observing them conducting the inspections, I was able to talk to the inspector, and he identified a crack that he noticed was a very small crack, but it was present both outside and inside the tank in the same location, which suggests that maybe at some point it might merit some repair. So I'll make sure to include these inspection reports in our master plan and take into consideration for the master plan any tank improvements that may be needed in the future. But overall, I think the inspections went very well, and it's good to have the tanks cleaned and inspected. So other than that, unless there's more questions on the written portion of the manager's report, I was going to go over a couple of the graphs. On the front page, the wastewater influent flows, I've noticed in September and October, flows are higher than they have been in the two previous years. Ray and I were actually talking about that earlier today, and it seems that perhaps maybe there's some more visitors, tourists, in the area in these later months. Even though we were impacted earlier in the summer with fewer, lower usage, we're starting to see that usage come up and stay up a little longer than it has in the last couple of years. Another explanation could be growth, but we've not had significant growth where I would expect it to show up like that. If you go back to the, I'm going to skip back to the third page and just discuss that our non-revenue water was running around 6 or 7% in the previous 2 months. We were up to 12%, which is probably more normal. But our overall goal is to have unaccounted for water below 10% if possible. So we'll keep a close eye on that. But again, that number is the difference between the amount of water produced and the amount of water that was consumed by our customer. And I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Well, Kirk, I appreciate you explaining that one again, because that's one that I'm not used to seeing, and I have to really stop and think every time I see it. What is that again? So I appreciate you explaining that.
My pleasure. It's one of the things I like to watch very closely. Coming from a district that had water breaks all the time, it's something that can give us a heads up on what to expect.
John?
Hey, Kirk, just kind of fill you in on some of that stuff you saw on those graphs on September and October. We certainly haven't seen here the traditional drop-off that we see after Labor Day, and I know that my friends that have vacation rentals have all been talking about that they've had the best September and October they've ever had. So I think that's certainly consistent with what you see on those graphs there.
Thank you for sharing that, because that's exactly how I was seeing it. I think you did a better job of explaining it.
That would also reflect the amount of rags going up quite a bit, too, for this last month.
Yeah, we did see an increase in rags.
Well, and that would be reflected in the last year we didn't have as many short-term vacation rentals. This year we have more. So we have more rags that month than we had last year. So.
Yeah, so we'll continue to watch those closely, and at some point, if it doesn't improve, we'll certainly do a public service announcement or something to try to get that back in check. And that's all I have to report.
All right, thank you, Kurt. Under unfinished business, the water and sanitation master plan update.
Yeah, the water master plan, I wanted to report tonight that we are scheduled to wrap up the water master plan by December of this year. So sometime in December, it should be wrapped up. It does appear that there's a lot of work to be done. I know my workload has increased as a result of having to review CIP projects that would potentially be needed in the future. That's where we're at right now. The water model work has been mostly completed. We've discovered a few things that we like and a couple of things that we don't. We're getting some good ideas, and I anticipate reporting some more details here in the next couple of months. The wastewater master plan was delayed because we wanted to capture some wastewater flows. We call them the diurnal flow patterns of daily flows, peak hours, and things like that. Those flow meters were installed in July. We've had to work with the contractor to make sure they did some calibrations a couple of times since then. So it's been sort of something we have to watch closely. But the last couple of months have looked better than the first 2 months, so that's a good thing. I think that it's going to be money well spent, without doubt, because it's going to give us a clear handle on what our sewer demands are, and it specifically at different times of the day. So, but that master plan won't be wrapped up until at least mid-2021. So I'll try to keep the engineers moving on that one, but the flow metering process sets that whole plan back about 6 months.
All right, thank you. Kirk, with the water master plan, seeing that may wrap up in December sometime, the board might have it in January, but it may be more likely February, in order to be able to review that before we begin to discuss that?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're seeing maybe a January timeframe for the board to review it with a discussion of February meeting at this point?
That's what I would expect. I don't know that it will be ready for the first Tuesday in January meeting.
Right.
If possible, it will be. That would be ideal. But sometime in January, I expect to have something for the board to review.
All right, thank you. Ann?
I'm trying to test my memory And do I remember that the last time we did the update to the master plan that we had a board workshop with the authority manager and the engineer, one of the engineers? If my memory is fuzzy, feel free to say so. Or maybe we could go back and check and see if we did that. It's a very complicated project. There's lots of details, and people do want to understand it completely. So it might be something to hold in our on a list of maybe things to do.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And we can certainly check back and see what was done in 2009, I believe it was.
I think it was. Thank you. I appreciate that.
At least
that.
The update portion was.
Tom? Did I understand you to say that it appears that they will probably have the work done, the engineering firm have the work done by January, and we would be able to review that work in February? Is that correct?
That would be worst case scenario, Tom. Right now the engineers expect to have it done in late December. Whether it will be in a format and completely reviewed by me prior to the first meeting in January is still unclear. I would like for that to happen. I certainly can commit to sometime in January. I expect that to be available for the board to review.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions on the master plan? Okay, thank you. Moving on to new business. First item is the Radio Reed water meter purchase. Kirk, you want to describe your summary and move us forward in that?
Sure. As the board is aware, I provided a water meter purchase summary sheet in the board packet, and it describes my experience working with our attorney. He thoroughly evaluated the City of Tigard purchasing contract with Consolidated Supply Company and has determined it would be acceptable for us to purchase on that contract. It was very encouraging. He did a lot of research to come to that conclusion. He contacted the Tigard contract manager and their attorney, and he found that they were very supportive of us participating on their contract and purchasing off of it. They also highly recommended Consolidated Supply Company. He did explain that we should use a contract format for the agreement that was similar to Tigard's, and I've already drafted, and he's already reviewed a purchasing agreement that is virtually just like theirs, that he's comfortable with. He also indicated that he feels the quote provided to us from Consolidated Supply Company is materially the same in product and price. Our purchasing policy encourages to utilize existing public contracts through the state of Oregon. There are a few things that are still needed.
I put mine in the garage.
I'm so sorry.
No problem. I was able to catch my breath while you were doing that. And so there are still two items that need to be done. There's more than that, but these are two purchasing items that I need to focus on. One is that I need to provide public notice of our intent to purchase utilizing an intergovernmental contract. And I still must provide notice to vendors who would otherwise be prospective bidders. And so I anticipate putting those two items together this week. Our attorney has offered to review both of those items before they're noticed. And that is the approach that I would like to take for the purchase of these water meters. Also, I wanted to share with the board some more specific costs as we got further along in the process of making this purchase. I've got some numbers that I can stand behind. The quote that was provided to the city of Tigard is this: they're currently purchasing meters at $112 a piece for their 5/8 inch meters, with radios costing $66 for a total of $178. This is less than what we originally looked at when I was doing the 20-year comparison. So I'm excited that we can do this project for less than I originally thought we could. The total estimated meter radio purchase for all of our meters, we don't have a lot of large meters, but we have about 15 meters that are larger sizes. The total cost of this project, or for these meter purchases, will be $270,000. Tom?
I had an understanding that there was a possibility that some of our existing bronze meters could be converted with the Minode M radio. Is that correct, or is this completely different?
No, that's absolutely correct. We do have some existing radios in place. As you know, I've identified the ages of our water meters in previous discussions, and it does look like there is an option to save at least some of the newer meters, where we can install an encoded register only on those meters.
What's that mean?
It means that we wouldn't have to replace a new meter with a slightly newer meter. We could perhaps, in some cases, install an encoded register directly onto that meter and read it just as if it were one of the new meters we purchased.
An encoded register, is that the radio you're referring to?
No, it communicates. It's the link between the mechanical meter and the radio. So this encoded register would take a digital register reading that we normally would read manually in the field and convert it to a digital number that our meter reading system can interpret.
Okay, thanks.
So the total cost of radios and meters would be $270,000. There's some additional AMR project costs that I've described previously and also in this summary. For a total estimated project cost of $370,000 to $400,000 would be the range I would expect this project to cost us. We do have $430,000 budgeted for this equipment in this budget year. And I'm happy to answer any questions that the board might have.
Dan?
Back to the first section there with the where you're talking about the meters themselves and the total estimated meter radio cost for all meter sizes, $270,000. Is that the highest end of the estimates that you're providing to us?
Yes, that is.
Okay, so
that is if we didn't utilize for any of our meters that option I was answering Tom's question for. If we were to purchase some encoded registers, we could save, here's the hard part of it, we only save $25 by just purchasing the encoded register. We're still going to be, sorry, I didn't look at that today, but I think it was $87 is what we were going to pay for that encoded register. For $112, we could buy the meter and the radio. I mean, for $112, we could purchase the meter and that comes with a new register. So I don't think in many cases it's going to make sense for us to install an encoded register, but if we do, for those we do, there's $2,000 or $3,000 worth of savings there to be had, but it's not as much as I would like to have been.
So the reason I asked that question is that I'm assuming that it's going to be appropriate to make a motion at some point, whether it's at this meeting or the next meeting, to authorize you as authority manager to proceed with that cooperative permissive agreement. And we have been in the practice of saying a top end price that we were authorizing for an expenditure of this sort. So that's why I was asking if this is what you envision as being the maximum, and that could be used as a part of a motion to move ahead with this.
Thank you, Ann, for thinking about that. But also, I can clarify that is the actual contract amount. That bid amount, it's the same price that Tigard is paying. They're required to sell us those meters at that exact same cost. So that's why I use that full amount for the total 1,455 meters that we're going to be purchasing total. It came out to $269,000+, and that's why I used that amount.
And if we do move forward with this agreement, what is the time frame on making those purchases so that we can guarantee we have that price still? Does that depend on how long it takes to do the contract and all that, or have they basically committed that price to us at this point?
That price is valid through June 31st of this year, or of 2021.
Thank you very much.
And it is my intent to make all those purchases in this budget year.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Good question. Any other questions?
I have some other thoughts on the other items, but I would maybe look to my fellow board members. Are we at a position with this where we want to make a motion, which I'll be happy to do, to proceed with this, or do we need to query these processes a little bit more and maybe put that off to next month?
John, any comment?
What is Kirk looking for? I mean, are you looking for a motion right now to move forward with this?
Yes, I would like to get board approval to move forward with this purchase utilizing the Tigard purchasing agreement.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Me too.
Okay. So
I will move the...
Before you go, I don't know if this part needs to be included in the motion or not, but at this point, as you look at the summary, in order to sign the permissive cooperative agreement, PCJWSA has to provide the public notice of intent and respond to that, and we have to provide the notice to vendors and respond to that, and have those processes completed prior to signing the contract, the permissive cooperative, the contract is part of the permissive cooperative procurement. I think that's the phrase, these terms are so new and so specific and yet so turned upside down at this point for most of us, or at least for me, to get that straight. So looking at this, the board has supported the AMR process through the approval of the revised master plan, through the budget process this year, and through our discussions over the last several meetings. So we are at a point where I believe we are ready to have a motion to approve the permissive cooperative, the contract as part of the permissive cooperative procurement, of which there are still two steps
of the procurement that need to be completed before Kirk and I can put our signatures on the contract that will then allow the purchases of the meters to go through. And so how, I don't know if we need to include all of that in the motion or if we're just going to motion, create a motion to approve the monies for the purchase of the meters. And I think, Michelle, correct me if I'm wrong over history, or Ann or Sean, that we approve the amount and full aware and in our meeting minutes that we have looked clearly at the process.
Correct.
Nodding your heads.
Yes.
My motion that I made notes to myself about was to proceed with the permissive cooperative agreement covering the purchase of the meters for an amount up to that amount of money, fulfilling all legal requirements in the process, which I think would incorporate those two specific things that you mentioned, but also leave the door open if there were some other tiny little thing that came in the contract.
Sounds good.
So, does that sound reasonable to everybody?
Indeed.
If so, I will move that we proceed with that we authorize the authority manager and the board chair to proceed with the permissive cooperative agreement covering the purchase of the meters and associated equipment for an amount up to $270,000 and fulfilling all legal requirements in the process. Yes, Michelle.
It can't be 270. It has to include the additional cost. So I my recommendation is to go up to 400 or 430.
I have a completely different opinion on that point.
Okay.
I think that the purchase of the meters is a completely separate issue and that those other costs will involve other contracts and will need to be reviewed as they come along and maybe soon. But we're going to have legal requirements on bidding with contractors for those additional processes and equipment and all that sort of thing too. And the permissive cooperative agreement doesn't extend to those things. It only extends to the meters. My thinking on it.
And that was exactly what I expected. And I know I would have to come back to the board for the remainder of those project costs.
Yeah, so this is a very different. Okay, and Michelle, I understand that because this is a very, very different way of approaching a project for us. In the past, we have always had awarded a contract to a general contractor, and this feels like we're being the general contractor on this project. So we're taking this kind of piece by piece.
Okay.
And there are going to be other contracts to issue. And so this permissive cooperative agreement, I'm sorry, I stumble over that every time too, simply addresses the purchase of the equipment. So if everybody else has, I mean, that was my thinking on it anyway.
No, I apologize for interrupting you.
No, don't apologize because we need all heads at the table to think these things through.
Tom? Okay, so the $270,000, according to Ann, your motion here is to purchase just the equipment, the basic meters themselves, but before we can purchase them, we still have to do the public notice and notice to vendors prior to actually purchasing the meters, correct?
That's correct, and that's covered in the part of my motion that says fulfilling all legal requirements in the process.
What kind of a timeline would be practical?
I wanted to leave the door open to there being other little legal things that need to be addressed along the way, and we rely on NOAA.
What would be a reasonable timeline to provide notice to the public and have them respond, as well as notice to vendors. talking about 30 days, 60 days, a week?
No, it's defined in the law, and I believe it was 2 weeks, but I will double check that. But yeah, as far as the public notice, that's why we won't sign any agreement or contract without completely meeting those posting and those feedback requirements. It sort of depends on whether or not there's a comment coming back to us. We have to take those into consideration. So until we fulfill our posting requirements, we're not going to sign the agreement. But what we're asking for today is approval of the authority to sign those agreements. It could happen prior to the next board meeting if everything goes smoothly.
All right, then I'd like to second that Ann's motion.
All right. We have a motion and a second. The motion is to authorize the authority manager to proceed with the permissive cooperative agreement up to an amount of $270,000, fulfilling all legal requirements that are part of the permissive cooperative procurement process. All in favor, signify by aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. So, Kirk, I think that, or I should say just to everyone, I think that the board supports the additional AMR project costs that you've got listed, but because of COVID and moving this project forward, it's not reasonable to have bids for installation at this point or a purchase order for a large amount of $50,000 that we can have definitively in front of us to give a thumbs up to, and we'll wait until those are ready from you, and then we'll sign off on that, and our plan is to move forward with the project.
Understood. And yeah, I look forward to coming back to the board next month with some either additional requests or some additional information at the very least.
Great. Thank you for all of your work on this. I know it's been a learning experience for us all, but I think we have served our customers well in finding an option that's going to save us more money than we had initially anticipated in going forward with this project, and I appreciate the work of everybody.
Thank you.
Moving on then to item 2 under new business, billing and financial software upgrade.
Okay, I'll introduce this, and then I'm going to have Michelle describe some of the specific details. But as the board knows, staff has been looking at our options and trying to determine whether or not we want to upgrade our existing Springbrook software or go out and look outside and look for a new product that could meet our needs. Michelle has been looking at all sorts of options, and with that introduction, Michelle, I'll let you describe what you've found.
Thanks, Kirk. I looked at, including Springbrook, 6 different companies. Some of them were on the cloud, some of them were what's called on-premise, which is what we have now currently in-house on our own server. I found that the one that was recommended by our own IT company, they pulled it within a week of recommending it because it had received a ransomware. So it was out. And Tyler Technologies is a very well-known good company, but I wasn't comfortable with that. In fact, even though I believe in the cloud and I think it will succeed in the future, I don't think that our small company is quite ready for it. So in the 6 companies that I researched from all over the country, none of which were in Oregon except for Springbrook, I found prices anywhere from $25,000 to, and that was a 1-year cost upgrade with small maintenance fees over the years, to $30,000 a year, $33,000 a year. The last one, which I actually really enjoyed the demo, loved it, loved the simplicity of it, was a utility billing software that used a third outsourced financial software, which made me uncomfortable. All of them had good points and some, you know, there's pros and cons to all software. But at this point in time, I went back and looked at Springbrook, which I think is complex, and it should be because it not only does small companies, but does very, very large cities. They have offered us an upgrade with a maximum price of $10,000. In 2011-12, we paid $26,000. This will take us to a whole new platform, and we will have to upgrade our server because they are going from an old 1990s server program to the 2020s. So we're going from an old Progressive to a SQL. I have discussed with them the options. One of the best things about this transfer and this upgrade is it has been 7 years. We will not have to have our customers re-enroll for auto payments on their recurring payments on their credit cards. All of this process will slide right through. All of the other software, obviously, we'd have a different bill pay system. Now, we will have a different bill pay system. It's called Civic Pay. However, because of the software we're using now, it can be transferred because it's within the same company. So I felt really good about that. It's a four-month process. It does have benefits, such as Kirk now getting this approval for these new meters. They run at the 0.2-digit meter reads. Well, currently what we're using, we can't do that. We're at the just whole numbers. And this upgrade will allow us to go to the 2-digit numbering system. So that's advantageous to us and the customer to get better accuracy in our meter readings. I have reported to Kirk in a full enhancement list of all of the enhancements that I thought were the most critical to us, from report printing. Every time we order checks, they're like $900 because they've always had to be custom. Now we can go to probably $100 secure checks. They just don't have the customization. They're not necessary anymore. Cash receipts will be faster. General ledger, once an account has been abandoned in the fiscal year, it doesn't have to continue. We've had some obsolete accounts with us for 10 years. Meter readings are going to be faster. There's mass updating wizards that we can use. I gave Kirk a full report, but my recommendation is that we do stay with Springbrook. The cost is well below what we budgeted. It's a four-month process to upgrade it. It goes along with what Kirk's doing in the AMR meter system. It enhances the customer with Civic Pay, which means they can go look at their statements online, gives them more options. So that's my... Yes.
No, yes. Thank you. Michelle, I might just summarize, too, that it just, from a staff perspective, will be so much easier for us to perform an upgrade than to go out and start from scratch, both on our financial end and our billing.
That's true. I've done from scratch before, not at this company, but I've done it at two other companies. That was one of my specialties, was, you know, find new software and get it implemented. It is a long process. It's expensive. There's a huge learning curve, and there's a huge customer curve. And at this point, at PCJ, it's, I agree with you, Kirk. It's, we don't need it right now.
And I also believe Rochelle's very supportive of staying with the Springbrook platform and methodology, correct?
Yes.
Tom, you had a question?
I'm going to go ahead and say that, you know, I'm going to trust you on this because I don't really have that kind of software background. But one thing I was concerned about was looking at the AMR project, I see that there is two additional software things that need to be purchased, and the mobile route management software really doesn't have anything to do with accounting, I don't think, but the CIS file interface software billing support, is that going to will that be integrated into this new basics financial software?
That's correct. That software is required so that the readers can import right into our billing system. So our billing system can handle the meter readings once they're input or imported, but you have to have software from the meters to import it. And so...
Okay, that makes sense. That's what I was concerned about, if there was, if that had been factored in into your thinking.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Michelle, what's the total cost on the Springbrook upgrade, including the
maximum? The maximum is $10,000. They gave us a really high expectation of 80 hours at $125 an hour. The meeting I had with them this morning, they're actually thinking they've looked at our stuff again. Since we have no customs, I decided to remove all the custom work we used to have because the upgrades don't require it, that it comes included. I'm thinking it's going to be between 8 and 10, but max at 10. We also have to have a $6,000 upgrade to the server, and that is a software upgrade. It's not the server machine itself, but that's the background operating system to run the new Springbrook.
Great.
So we're looking at $16,700 max. Did I say that right?
Any questions, Sean? Okay, so I'm assuming since there are two purchases here to be made and neither one hits the upper level of board approval and they're both in the budget, that this is just something you're sharing with us and wanting some input from, and that make sure that there are any holes that we need to poke in it, and then you'll move forward with it.
Yes,
it's so
yes.
Right, Ann?
Just questions of my fellow board members. Do we have consensus that this would be a good thing to do in the way that Michelle's recommended it?
Yep.
I feel that it is.
We do. I do too. Yeah.
So
you have consensus and support.
Thank you,
Michelle and Kirk.
Thank you very much
for your hard work on this. And I so appreciate not having a new system during COVID, when everybody is a little bit on edge anyway. Well, like Kurt said, we just don't need to introduce more problems into people's lives at this point.
I think one of the most important parts of it was the fact that we didn't have to ask the customer to re-sign up for recurring payments. I think that was important. However, I must admit that the most expensive company out there sure looked good.
Kind of that Mercedes concept.
Kind of.
So with water meters, it was Cadillacs. With building systems, it's Mercedes.
All right, moving on. The in-person community meeting. Sean, I think it was you that brought this up first of all a couple of meetings ago. Do you want to begin the discussion on this?
Sure. I just, as I've said before, I think it's important that we maintain our commitment to transparency and our commitment to the public process. And so I would like to see us sometime in the beginning of next year do a actual public meeting. Obviously, it would require using the community center so we could try to get as many people as possible in there. Probably won't get a whole lot of people to show up, but I think it's important as part of our commitment to transparency that we have an open and public meeting.
Hey, Tom?
Well, I agree with Sean. I regret to have to say that I've actually heard some criticism about, and not from our usual critics, by the way, which kind of surprised me. But I know that Kirk has been going out of his way to keep those folks informed, but we still have a large group of people in our district that aren't really computer literate. And although I compliment Tim Hirsch from the Civic City Sun to get a lot of that information that we generate here on the board out to the public, but I kind of look at it the way Sean does, you know, just the perception and impropriety sometimes leaves a bad taste in the community's mouth. And yeah, COVID has been, you know, pretty challenging. However, I did do some checking personally into the KCC, and using the governor's COVID guidelines, they can put up to 100 people in that building, as long as everybody's wearing masks and the spacing and all that sort of thing. Memory serves, we rarely get 25 at our regular meetings. And the Faye Jensen room there will easily hold 30. And what I was going to suggest is that we have like the January meeting to try this meeting there at KCC, the Faye Jensen room, to see that everything works okay and it's going to work for us. And then considering the fact that our master plan might be ready by the end of January, I would entertain the thought of having another public meeting either February or March to specifically look at the master plan for the public, because I'm sure that folks have a lot of interest in that, because we've been talking about it for a year or so. I think that would ideally be the best time to have a public meeting. But I recommend that we have a meeting at KCC, the Faye Jensen Room, on January the 3rd, which is our next, which would be two months from now, and following COVID rules and regulations. And that's my recommendation. And then possibly have a follow-up where we might have more than 30 people. That would be the proper place to do it, to discuss the master plan after we possibly had a workshop in between or whatever, and hammer out any minor details that need to stand it.
Ann?
I'm looking forward to a day, too, when we can do this and feel good about it from a safety standpoint. I did notice that the governor extended the state of emergency for the state of Oregon as a whole to January 2nd. I think we need to be, as a public agency, I think we need to be mindful of that. We're not a, you know, we're not a neighborhood association, that sort of thing. We're public agencies, I think, have a little higher standard of responsibility. Or I feel that I have a higher standard of responsibility, let me say it that way, to make sure that we're doing everything in the best interest of our customers, and that to me includes protecting their health. a vast number of people that are our regular customers who live here in town are, as I am reminded, I am every single day in the vulnerable population. And so I have that added concern at this point. I feel as though the other thing that I'm hearing in the news a lot, and I don't want to overreact to this, but I'm hearing that instances of places that are trying to move back to public meetings, governments and organizations and all kinds of different things, that the people in charge of these meetings are finding themselves in the position of being the mask police, or feeling as though if there were a case that came out of it that they were somehow responsible. So I'm kind of, as I said in the beginning, I'm very supportive of the concept. I want to see us be able to get back to a time where we can do this comfortably. I am personally at this moment not comfortable with it, so I'm glad we're talking about it maybe for January, because I think as each week and month goes by, we learn more. Unfortunately, the trend is not in a positive direction, so that gives me further pause to making any commitment to January. But the other part of the whole concept to me is to, and Tom, it sounds like maybe you've had some, and Sean, I think you referred to conversations last month or maybe 2 months ago with people that were feeling as though they were not getting access to information. I'm very concerned about that, because each month we have talked with Kirk and Michelle and Rochelle about are we getting emails? Are we getting phone calls? Are we getting questions like that? Are we getting inquiries? And each month I've heard that no, we're not getting any inquiries. So as a board member, if somebody asks me something, nine times out of ten, it's of a nature that I can't answer. And so my first response is, call the office. They'll get you to the right person. They'll get you an answer. They'll explain that procedure. They'll show you the map of whatever. And so encouraging an interchange of information and answers to questions that we will and can provide, I think, is sort of where I am at this moment. I don't want to see anyone in our board, our staff, or our community see the fact that we're not scheduling public meetings as that we're somehow covering something up.
That's where I'm at too.
Very dangerous. I think that's a very dangerous concept to have out there. I have never heard anybody say that personally. And if I did, I would be all over that to get that person answers to the questions and make that conversation happen. But I don't want to personally overreact and possibly make a plan that would put in danger people in the community. At least I don't want to make that plan at this moment. I'm eager to get to the time when we can. So.
Well, I
do you agree with on that?
Yeah, I do. I agree with quite a bit of what you have to say, Ann, but I would point out that I know of, the Chamber of Commerce meets there. The Dory
Association. They canceled their meeting today, Tom.
Did they really?
They canceled their meeting today, and they're planning their meeting next month, but who knows if that will go forward either.
Well, the Dory Association, like I said, has met twice. Tillamook County, I also like to point out, is less than 50 cases in the entire county of 1,200 square miles. I only personally know of two people in my group of acquaintances who have picked up this thing, and they were both made mistakes, and as long as the safety things are followed, and I think we need that public meeting, and I'm thinking January. I mean, we can always change it if we have to, but I'm thinking that January, that meeting would be a good one to start, and then maybe in another month, possibly two, depending on how our master plan faces up. I know that that's going to have a great deal of interest, and we need to make sure that that one's public for sure. But I'm thinking if we do this one in January, we'll kind of get the bugs worked out. We'll make sure that our communications are, you know, are out there. Maybe have a public in service announcement on the local radio stations and the newspaper and that sort of thing. But get some participation and do it safely. We haven't had a single case that we know of out of the KCC, and you know, if we can help them out a little bit too, they're really hurting because they last summer, of course, they couldn't have any weddings or parties or anything, and financially they need a little help. And it's my understanding it would be somewhere around $100 an hour, so for a couple hour meeting, it's not something that we can't afford, but it would help them out a little bit too. So I'm thinking it would be a good idea to have a motion tonight to at least, you know, have one in on the January meeting. I'd like to make that motion.
I'd like to weigh in if I could before you start in on the motion, Tom.
Go ahead.
I think it's critical that we do communicate with our customers as well as we can and involve them in what we're doing. I think we have done our best during COVID to do so, and we are definitely in a different place than we were in March and April when we started this. I think that we all have become much more familiar and at ease with online meetings, to the point where we may want to invite our customers to call in, or to call in, because we know that we can control the video, I mean the audio, from this way, and that they wanted to make a comment during our meeting, that if they let us know beforehand, that we can announce that and unmute their mic and give them the opportunity to speak just as we would at any of our regular meetings. The Tillamook County COVID caseload now is at 80. Our positivity rate in Oregon has gone, will be announced tomorrow, I think at 8.2%, which is double what it was a couple of months ago. I have some concerns about the community center in terms of not how many people they would allow to be there, or the recommendations of the CDC to be there, but when we are 6 feet apart, just the six of us, Kirk and the five board members, with masks on, the people on the outside of that length are 36 feet. And 36 feet away from somebody, you cannot hear them talk with a mask on unless you have a microphone. And I don't think the community center has a sixth set of microphones, let alone a system to use mics with the audience that would allow us to clean and wipe those in between people, or even get them to people. So I think before we can set a meeting, we have not only equipment pieces and logistics to work out, but then there is also the case that in Pacific City, 50% of our voters are over the age of 65, which puts them at risk in a room, even though that they are masked. And we have some people in Pacific City that are refusing to wear masks. If we set this meeting up in a way that those people choose, because of their own safety or because of their own preferences, not to attend, I think in some ways we've excluded them. And I'm concerned about setting up an opportunity which doesn't allow for everybody to to attend or be part of the process.
No one's attending but us right now. I mean, the only person... That's not good.
That is true.
That's not good, Carolyn. Not a good thing.
That may not be good. I can tell you from attending meetings for at least 16 years that the majority of those meetings before coming on the board, there was nobody at those meetings other than Betty Robinson and I on the board. So this organization has had many years of no participation or very little participation from the community at their board meetings. The last 4 or 5 years have been different, and part of that is the projects that we have needed to do and the cost to the community and the fact that we have also reached out to them. So I agree with you that I don't think it's good that the community is not involved, but we are doing a number of things to pull the community in and hopefully get them interested, and hopefully we can continue to work on that, and maybe we need to call customers and invite them to call in and participate in the meeting. There may be other ways that we can look at those options. So I personally, as a board member, agree that we need to have community input, and we would like that. I think our greatest opportunity is going to be at the time that our master plans are being completed, because that is something that would generate hopefully some really good discussion. But I personally cannot support at this point planning a detailed meeting for January when we are in the middle of a current pandemic crisis that is spreading like wildfire in a number of places. If your positivity rate has doubled in 2 months, it is spreading. Oregon has the lowest per capita testing in all the states in the country. We're missing cases. I appreciate that we don't see it here in Tillamook County as much, but I think it's more here than we think that it is, and I think people are doing a good job of not getting together and so forth. So personally, as a board member, I can't support that. So that's my opinion. If you'd like to make a motion at this point, you're more than welcome to do so. That's part of the process and how we run our meetings. So I'd be happy to entertain a motion if you'd like to make one, Tom. Oh, before we go there, Sean has his hand up. John?
Yeah, I'd just like to say a couple of points, and I apologize, my internet went out there for a minute, so I don't know if I missed anything. But first, you know, the county commissioners have opened up their commissioners' meetings to the public. It's limited. You know, there's a maximum number of people that can get in there, but they have opened them up. Second point I'd like to make is my observations and the observations of the people that I am in close contact with is that there are various degrees of government in this state that are absolutely taking advantage of the fact that, you know, COVID is happening, meetings are being done by video to get things pushed through that they would not normally do. And that is an observation that I myself see, and it's an observation that people have certainly made apparent to me. And so I don't think that we're doing anything as a PCJWSA that's not transparent, but I do think that it's important that we, you know, make sure that we do everything that we can to make this process as transparent as possible. So I understand that things are getting worse. They definitely are with COVID. But I do like the idea of having an open meeting at some point.
And before I go to
question first, Sean. Tom, when you have these conversations with people who sound as though they're basically suspicious of government entities, maybe not us in particular, but government entities in general, I guess I have two levels of question. One is, do you ask them if they have those suspicions about Pacific PCJWSA? And secondly, do you ask them if they feel comfortable and would they call us if they had a question or needed to figure something out or wanted to understand something about our system, and if they have ever called in to listen in to the meetings?
I have not had anyone say or express any concerns about PCJWSA.
That's good.
That is good, yeah.
Thank you.
But I think it falls into the overall, atmosphere of distrust in government right now.
My word for it is paranoia.
It could very well be, but, you know, it disturbs me when I know we're all honorable people here, but just the suggestion of impropriety, you know, bothers me. It bothers me a lot because
impropriety, and what kind of impropriety are they suggesting?
Well, we're trying to, Kirk was saying, we were trying to pull something that we normally wouldn't. We're going to purchase, you know, in the process of purchasing these meters, which has been reported in the Sun. But we haven't had any feedback from people.
Whose responsibility is that?
I don't know. It's mine, I suppose.
The people who would have a concern, it's their responsibility to give us feedback. We can't go door to door and ask them if what they think about it.
Okay, well, all I know is what I've heard, and I firmly believe, I understand, you know, your position, I understand Carolyn's position, but we are a public entity, we ought to have a public meeting. And these are extraordinary times, I agree with you, but we're not going to get anywhere.
We don't have anybody take advantage of it. We have public meetings. This is a public meeting. We don't have anyone take advantage of it. That would be my message to anyone who's suspicious about local government, us in particular, is call the office. It's been reported many times in the paper. It's on our website. Call this number, ask for the connection, how you dial into the meeting, and you can do that on your telephone. It doesn't require a computer. So I would like to see those who want information taking advantage of what we're offering before I put others at risk by sponsoring a meeting that it may be premature to do. I mean, and again, I want to underscore all of this by the fact that I really want to have public meetings too. I want to get back to that time where we can have this public meeting and be comfortable doing it and everybody's safe. And it will come.
Well, I think it's pointless to have a motion this evening, but I'm glad we're having this conversation.
So am I. Appreciate you bringing it up that way.
I think it's good, and maybe what we need to do is reach out a little bit more and invite in a different way our public to a meeting. Maybe we can contact Tim and talk to him a little more and let people know that they just can dial in and join us with a telephone, and that we've got both Rochelle and Michelle here and people helping us keeping all but the board muted, and that if people do want to talk at the meeting, that we need to have them set that up prior to that, but we'd be more than happy to have them online with us. And that would make us feel better, and maybe that's the angle we need to take, is that we really like to see them participate with us as we go through this process, and maybe we can look work a little harder on that and see where we're at. At the same time, let's keep a close eye on what's going on out there, and hopefully in a month or 2 months or three, we'll be at the point where the positivity rate is back down in the 2-3% range, and when we get there, I think we'd be much more comfortable with getting together in person, or at least I would be. So again, thank you for the conversation. Yes, Tom?
How many months, just Kirk, maybe you can help me here. How many months have we operated with this video conferencing now?
Since April, I believe.
Yeah, since April. What is that, 7 months?
Yeah, that's...
Eight months.
Yeah, that's quite a ways, quite a while, but we can let it drop for now, I guess. We're not going to get anywhere tonight with it, but once again, thanks for everybody's comments, because this worries me a lot.
Well, when you talk with those folks that are concerned, encourage them to call Kirk or call Michelle or Rochelle with their concerns, because we all share an interest in having our customers and our community members' concerns addressed. We really, we truly do. I don't know one of us that would ever put that on a second shelf. But people have to reach out to get answers to questions just the same as they have to reach out to come to a meeting. It's kind of the same thing, but different.
I would like to add too, I'm happy to reach out to customers that I feel might want to participate in our meetings but haven't because of the video conferencing. I could reach out to them and at least get some comments and feedback from them and assure them that everything is, we're trying to keep everything as open as possible.
Thank you, Kirk.
All right, then. Moving on to guest comments. Kirk, did you get any emails or calls from customers?
I hate to report. No, I haven't.
Thank you. Then item 9, any other director comments? Tom?
We haven't brought this up in some time, but... I noticed that the light fixture on the Beachy Bridge is non-existent anymore. It was off for a while. I don't know who took the whole fixture down. I imagine the PUD did. Is that our responsibility? And if it is, I suggest that we put another light up there.
No. What we found was originally we were notified that they were going to take it down or if we didn't fix it. But we found an old document that actually verified that that wasn't ours. And so they disconnected it without any further communications, and we didn't feel compelled to pay for a new light that wasn't really ours.
Who was paying the electric bill?
I don't believe... I
don't think we can say.
Go back to that agreement, because I do know this. Our electric bill did not go down when they took it out.
Well,
it was just one light fixture.
Did the PUD take it down, or did the county, you know?
That's a good question. I want to verify which it was. I thought it was...
I can't imagine
the county would take it down.
Yeah,
they don't have permission.
No.
It'd have to be the PUD.
Yeah, I find it a safety issue, you know, people walking across.
You can have a petition filled out to get one in that PCJWSA would purchase and pay for, but it takes a full-on petition.
And Michelle, can that be added to the because it would be added to the bill as another streetlight fixture. And my understanding when that was approached last time, that we can't do that without the approval of all the customers?
No, not true. No, that is not true. As long as we pay for it and we distribute it evenly between all of the customers, it has to be set, like 50 of the closest customers. It's a petition, and then it goes before the board. The board has to approve it, not the customers. But it's a petition filled out by the customers, goes to the board, then we decide, you decide to have it installed or not, and then it goes on our bill. And we are, you know, obviously it's being charged at 45 cents to every customer because it enhances every customer or not enhances every customer. So it's evenly split, and it affects their rate. And it's so minimal that one streetlight doesn't affect the rate much.
Well, I'm just wondering if PUD did it because they didn't want to deal with it. And
no, they will only take one out or put one in if it's paid for.
Well, and here was the issue, too, is it was a safety hazard for... The power line was blowing right up into it, and so there was a need to either remove it or relocate it. And the cost for relocation, PUD thought we were going to have to pay that, but we found the document that we did not own that. And in retrospect, I don't think we were paying for that. And so that's why they just took it out. I'm not saying we couldn't install another one, but it couldn't go in that same location.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a question for Doug Olson.
That I was thinking of. Doug or the county commission.
I would be happy to contact Doug and follow up on that and also ask him if he has any comments regarding our public meeting.
Who owns the bridge? That's the county, isn't it?
It may be the state because it's on Three Capes Drive.
I don't know.
A controlled road.
Okay, we don't have that answer as well.
Okay, that's all I had on director comments.
Any other director comments? All right, on that note, thank you very much. It is 6:27, and I will adjourn our meeting.